on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there, thank you very much for joining us. Well, you might have heard the news and been listening to it on ABC News. Actually, John Sentamu, the Archbishop of York, calling for a vigil over the issue of Zimbabwe. John Sentamu famously cut up his clerical collar on British television just a couple of months ago, saying he wouldn't put it on again until the issue of Zimbabwe had been dealt with. John Sentamu is an outstanding example of the way churches bring together issues of social and moral concern. That is, the public sphere is the sphere in which the church should be involved. Not something that all our politicians have agreed on. But tonight we're going to get into an area where the churches do have almost a foundational stake. The environment. This evening, God and the Greens. It's interesting to note that these groups often have more in common than most people care at first glance to notice. For example, this weekend, the Rudd government sprang a surprise policy launch in one of the key areas of social concern, binge drinking. It announced an increase in the taxation rate applied to what are popularly known as alcopops, that is, lolly-flavoured spirit-based drinks pitched at young drinkers and particularly popular with young women. The move met with endorsement from a diverse range of groups, stretching from the churches to the Greens. And it's not just on this issue that the Greens and the religious lobby find common cause. The spread of gaming machines is another area in which the churches and the Greens share an agenda. And of course, on that most foundational of issues, the care of the earth. Both bring a depth of engagement that's beyond the rhetorical, working both practically and politically to bring about change. So why is it that more often than not, in the theatre of politics and the public space, Greens and Christians seem to go out of their way to demonise one another? Whether it be family first versus the Greens for political preferences, churches complaining about the shallowness of eco-spirituality, or the Greens complaining about church attitudes to bioethics, these two major social elements in the politics of the future seem unable on this foundational issue to make common cause. And just imagine if they could. Well, that's our topic tonight, God and the Greens. In just a few moments, we'll be joined by three who share their opinions with us and then listen to yours on our talkback number 1300 800 222. Write it down and I'll let you know when to call. 1300 800 222. If you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, do so now. Yes, give us a call right now from South Australia or the Northern Territory, 1300 800 222. And for the rest of the country, just hold your fire for a little while. In our second hour this evening, something of war and remembrance. Last Thursday, the 24th of April, the day before Anzac Day, was the national day for another group profoundly affected by the events in Turkey during World War I. The Armenians. Many of you may have seen Foreign Correspondent this week and their story of the Armenian genocide of 1915, an event whose horror is made more poignant in the quote from Adolf Hitler when contemplating the coming Holocaust of the 30s and 40s, "Who now remembers the Armenians?" Well, tonight in about an hour, we'll be talking with Archbishop Balyozian of the Armenian Orthodox Church in Australia, a man whose life is lived in the distant shadow of the events of 1915. Then, of course, there'll be our usual basket of good things. The Midnight Inquisition, a postcard with Noel, some music, and the chat room. Tonight, our guest, Samina Yasmin, Associate Professor and the Director of the Centre for Muslim States and Societies at the University of Western Australia in Perth, and recently one of the chosen at the 2020 Summit. So stick around for a busy evening, and first, some music. Here's Bob Dylan from his 2006 album, Modern Times, Beyond the Horizon.
Beyond the horizon, behind the sun, at the end of the rainbow, life has only begun. In the long hours of twilight, neath the stardust above, beyond the horizon, easier to love. I'm touched with desire. What don't I do? Through flame and through fire, I'll build my world around you. Beyond the horizon, in the springtime or fall, love waits forever for one and for all. Beyond the horizon, across the divide, around about midnight, we'll be on the same side. Someone prayed for your soul. My wretched heart is pounding. I felt an angel's kiss. My memories are drowning in mortal bliss. Beyond the horizon, at the end of the game, every step that you take, I'm walking the same.
Bob
Dylan. A little nostalgia trip there for Bob Dylan fans around the world. Because we're going around the world tonight, Sunday night, on the World Wide Web, and you can podcast us if you like. abc.net.au/Sunday Nights will take you to the page with the podcast and all the other bits and pieces about the program each week. Tonight, the Greens and God. Is there a problem? Whilst on many issues, the Greens and the churches seem to share similar concerns, not just for the environment, but over the spread of gaming machines, the prevalence of binge drinking, and of course, stewardship of the natural world, profound issues divide them. Are we dealing with matters of politics or deep principle? Well, it's welcome into the studio this evening, Father John Fleming, the president of Campion College in Sydney, Lee Rhiannon, member for the Greens in the New South Wales Legislative Council, and the Reverend Eleni Poulos, director of justice issues for the Uniting Church of Australia. Welcome to you all.
Hello, John.
Hi, John. Evening.
So, how about, before we get started on our wider topic, Kevin's king hit on Alco Pops. Lee Rhiannon, the Greens have been strong on this in common with the churches. This is one of those issues which you do share common cause.
Oh, yes, there certainly are many common causes. Look, it was a good move by the Prime Minister today. It's a hefty tax. But we do still wonder why he actually didn't move against those Alco Pops, because everybody knows why they have been designed. They've been designed to pull in young drinkers. They do that extremely successfully. It's interesting, the opposition leader's comment, Mr. Nelson, he said, well, if they're expecting to make all this money out of tax, it doesn't sound like people are going to stop drinking it. So I think that's the big test now.
Yes. Eleni, do you think this is a substantial and realistic move or a little bit of cosmetic?
I think it's a good step in the right direction, but I think like most really serious social issues, legislation is only one part of the solution. So I'd be looking to what we're going to do next in terms of building healthy communities where, you know, kids are engaged with, you know, the fullness of life and they have other things to do with their time rather than go out and get trashed on a Saturday night. Mm.
John Fleming.
Well, I think both of those answers miss the key point, and that is that drunkenness is inherently an evil thing, a wrong thing to do. And I think that it's really a degree of hypocrisy on the part of the community when it's all right for adults to go out and get themselves smashed out of their tiny brain on wine and beer and then target Alco Pops. Now, I agree with targeting Alco Pops because they are a cynical design for a sweetened drink to attract people to alcohol and to get them to drink themselves into oblivion. But at some point, the Australian community has got to give rather better reasons than the kind of consequentialist reasoning that I've just now heard. I think we have to be able to say, in principle, it is an immoral act to get drunk because that is a surrender of one's personal bodily integrity to a substance. You lose control.
But does that sort of, in principle, philosophically sound argument cut much ice with a kid?
Well, it's never been presented. I mean, what's actually been presented is complete hypocrisy. Yeah. Of smashed out of their brains politicians having a crack at Alco Pops. I mean,
but,
give me a break here, guys.
Respect,
I mean,
John, when you're sitting here saying that, yeah. I mean, how much is the church actually out there advocating that position? When I brought into the New South Wales Parliament to ban MPs drinking on the job, it was some of your religious colleagues who were the people who were saying, no, we shouldn't do this because we can all manage it and we don't need to have a ban. Well, it sounds like you're speaking out big tonight, but what's the church doing?
Again, you see, that's your problem. So you just missed the issue. I'm not against drinking at all. I've had a couple of myself before I came in tonight on John's behalf. I'm talking about drunkenness, and that's the issue. It's getting people to understand that there is a level of responsible drinking, and going around banning MPs drinking is may very well fit the Wowser mentality, but doesn't do the deal.
No, it's about when they're on the job.
The deal is that you've got people saying, I can get drunk on my booze of choice, I'm going to attack the Alco Pops. I would much rather to hear a government come serious about the problem of inebriation.
Well, moderation. That's what you were working towards, wasn't it, Delaney?
It was, but I think to claim that it's immoral or not is actually itself missing the point. I think the point the state of our communities and the resilience that we build up in young people. The sense of community and friendship and neighbourliness that we have, I think that's the point. And what we're looking for, what the Uniting Church is is looking for in all aspects of society life, a healthy, flourishing societies. And I'm not actually sure that labelling something as immoral or not is helps us actually get to the point of what do we need as
I'm absolutely sure it does. I mean, Aristotle had no difficulty in talking about exactly those terms about a flourishing, healthy society. But flourishing, healthy societies depend upon good personal moral decisions and taking responsibility. If you're actually
all I'm saying here,
John, is really have a crack at the alcopops by all means, but get real. If you've got other people saying it's okay for me to get drunk on my drug of choice, why did you choose the alcopops?
It's not the issue I want to discuss tonight foundationally, but it does demonstrate that the pie can be sliced a number of ways here. There is another issue on which the churches and the Greens do share some common ground I mentioned earlier, and that's on the spread of gaming machines. Now, here is another issue that, even perhaps more so than alcohol, Lee Rhiannon, is a clear example of people, you could argue, industry actually engaging in behaviour that it knows is destructive of a section of society. That is, I heard a psychiatrist actually describe it once as industry being psychiatrically destructive. I mean, that there here was a deliberate intent to exploit people's weaknesses. This is something also the Greens have spoken out about.
Oh yes, very much so. And I think what you're heading to, it's about making money. It's about making large amounts of money. And when John, myself and Lainey were just speaking before we came in, we were talking about this very problem. Now, gambling issues are a huge one. But again, I'm not sure, and I'd be interested to hear from John, because when the Greens last year called for a gambling summit, we gained support for that call from the Salvation Army, from the United Church, from various other organisations, but I'll just mention the religious ones now. But often you'll hear that the Catholic Church is a bit ambivalent on gambling issues. Now, I'm not sure if that's the case, but certainly I don't see them being so active as I do other sections of the people of faith. So I'm wondering where they do stand on that issue.
John, your response on the gaming issues. Well, the pokies, really, we're talking about
put
here.
Put very simply, in the Catholic moral tradition, we are not opposed to gambling per se. The objection to gambling machines is that they're not a gamble. They are pre-programmed for a profit to be made by whoever happens to own the machine, usually set around about 87%, so 13% profit. And I think you'll find my understanding is that the Catholic dioceses all around the country have objected to forms of gambling which are directed towards taking money from people under false pretenses. I've got not much of a problem with two-up that I would have with a gaming machine. And in fact, I'm quite happy to buy a lottery ticket because I know what my chances are. Buckley's and none.
Take an educated guess on the Gigi's. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But so I think that you talk about the Catholic Church being ambivalent. We have a clear moral position. We are not opposed to gambling in principle, as Protestant churches in the past, at least, have frequently taken that position. So we would need to know what summits are going to be about, what the agenda really is about. Certainly where gaming machines are concerned, I don't know of a single Catholic bishop that wants to defend them.
Eleni, the Uniting Church has been strong on this too, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And I think most of our work has been done in Victoria and South Australia. We've seen big wins in terms of getting government on board to actually tackle problems that arise out of pokies and ATMs in clubs, all of that kind of stuff. So, this is one thing that we share with the Greens, grave concern.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. We're talking about the Greens and God, issues that divide and issues that, well, people may be able to share, even if they don't agree 1,000% with each other. Let's begin to talk about this issue of the environment. It's become increasingly clear over recent years that whether or not it's within 20 years or 50 years or 100 years, we are facing significant problems with the environment, and that those significant problems, to some certain extent, perhaps the majority extent, are derived from our use of carbon and perhaps our overuse of carbon. The temperature of the planet is increasing. What are we, as humans, to do about that, to restore the natural balance? Church traditions have a strong theology of stewardship for the environment. The Greens have a strong position on saving the planet. Yet on this most powerful of issues, we see the most profound of divisions. Let's talk first about the areas which we share and then those things which divide. Now, there are all sorts of argument about to what extent, you know, global warming is happening, and but there is nevertheless a shared understanding, is there not, John Fleming, that we are, in a religious tradition, we have been given responsibility for the care of creation.
There's no doubt that that's true, and there's no doubt that over history, people's attitudes to the environment have expressed ambivalences depending on the passage of history you're looking at. For example, in earlier parts of history, the environment was seen as a threat. We're under threat of all kinds of things that we couldn't
control.
Well,
that was true even up to 60, 70 years ago.
Absolutely. And on the other hand, there is this clear part of the Christian tradition that you've well set out of stewardship. I mean, if you look at the early Jewish tradition, for example, they got onto the idea of resting the earth every 7 years from over-farming. Mm. So the idea of, which was wrongly expressed by White and co. in the early Green Movement, that somehow there was something wrong with Christianity that led to the despoiling of the environment, when in fact, if you look, it's the sons and daughters of the atheists, the Enlightenment, who despoiled the universe.
Hang on.
who despoiled the environment in Eastern Europe big time, and bigger time than we've seen anywhere else. The truth is there has been, within the Western tradition, the strongly orthodox Christian view that says the environment is to be cared for. It's both a resource and it's our home. On the other hand, there have been those who've been quick to see it's a quid to be made. And therein lies the problem.
Eleni Poulos, there has been another tradition in Protestantism particularly, and it came out of America in the 19th century in particular, but it was also there in lots of British stuff about sort of going off into the dark places of the world, that in some ways the job of humanity was to hold dominion over creation and exploit it. And that was a strongly argued Christian tradition. I can even recall one mining executive in Australia defending the mining industry on that very basis.
Yes, it was. That ancient notion of go forth and subdue the earth and multiply without care for what you do. I mean, I totally disagree with John. I think Christianity has had a dreadful part to play in the destruction of the planet. And I think it's one of those issues where you see both the positive, creative, life-affirming parts of Christianity and the really awful, destructive parts. And what we've come to understand is that it's that life-affirming, creative stream of Christian theological thought that is actually going to help save the planet.
Can you tell me one church statement that justifies what you've just said? Yes, individual people who call themselves Christians have behaved in an irresponsible manner. Give me one statement from an official church body of any standing that would have justified what you just said then, and you won't find one.
If you look at the
Holy
Cardinal
Father,
Pell,
Pope John Paul
from
II.
Cardinal Pell.
Well, I Cardinal mean, Pell is a very good man. But
Cardinal Pell is really not bringing leadership to his own community.
You mean he doesn't agree with you? That's all you're saying.
No, well, hang on.
No, no, let's
what,
finish
what's
on this
the point
one.
You
this
made,
is
Lee?
Where, well, let's remember what Cardinal Pell has said about climate change, the most critical issue that we're facing. And he spoke about pagan emptiness and about Western fears when it comes to addressing climate change. And he went on to say that some of the hysteria and extreme claims about global warming. And just recently, in his column in The Telegraph, he went to great pains to talk about how cold it is in Europe, which is fundamentally misunderstanding what is going on with climate change. It's not just about the world getting warmer, it's about disrupting the climate patterns and the enormous consequences it will have for future generations. So there are very clear statements that John is not owning up to that's coming from the leader of his church.
I think Cardinal Pell, to be fair, just because Cardinal Pell, to be fair, wasn't addressing the point that John was making. Cardinal Pell was talking about a particular reading of the situation at the moment. John, you were asking for a statement in principle about... Now, I think it is true that there are examples around the world of what was called, because it developed the name, dominion theology, that was evident in church teaching.
What did it mean, though? What does it mean to have dominion? That was always been the great debate that went on within Christianity, how to treat the environment both as resource and home. How to treat with respect your home, yet at the same time derive the benefits that you needed to live. Now, there's always been the tension there, and that discussion has gone on over the centuries. I'm challenging anybody to come out with a statement that would endorse Eleni's position here, that somehow or other Christianity, qua Christianity, is responsible for the destruction. That is just garbage.
Christianity.
The church and Christians throughout centuries, John, have to bear their share of the burden
for what we are seeing now.
Where's the evidence? I mean,
give
Christians
it to me.
Have to confess that
Give us the evidence.
Okay. The evidence is the development of in the industrial capitalist world that was supported by Christianity as a major political power that has pushed forth the idea that growth and money is everything. And the church actually has to be accountable for itself.
I'm very happy to be accountable. What you've given me is a broad set of generalisations that wouldn't pass an essay. I want to know what the evidence is.
The fact is that individual people may
make their conclusions, and they always have, within the theological tradition of the Church, in the terms of its teaching authority. And I'm talking about the Catholic Church here.
I see this balance between home and resource. Yeah.
Well, that's my church here.
Yes. but it's the focus on the earth as resource
and home.
Yes, and the focus on earth as home is going to be one of the metaphors that can save us. But the focus on earth as resource is one of the things that can damn us.
To be fair, it was Ronald Reagan, Secretary of State for the Environment, who felt so confident in the dominion theology approach that he was able to basically put down the environmental movement very strongly. And that became a very famous quotation of his. And I think it is the case.
When did Ronnie Reagan, John, adopt the position of Holy Father of the Catholic Church, or indeed leader of any church?
But Ronnie Reagan
was a politician with his own...
John, you are denying history because you know how strong
well,
in the United States the whole prosperity theology has been. You know that's the case, and how closely associated they are this day with President Bush's administration, and they were also with Ronald Reagan's
prosperity theology is associated with particular Protestant groups. I agree with you. I'm just simply saying, from the Catholic moral tradition, from where I come, there has been a continuing debate
that maybe,
about
yes.
about well, maybe that's a billion Catholics, that's a billion no, Christians, no, no. That's the dominant. And I want to know where this evidence is that there's any church document, any church teaching that said, "Go for it, baby."
Can I actually just get some clarification here? The word church is being used both with a capital C and a small c here. John, you're using the word church to mean the Catholic Church. Generally, Eleni and Lee, you're using it to describe the corpus of Christianity.
The ecclesial communities, apart from the Catholic Church, they vary enormously.
They do.
And it's very almost impossible, because there's just so many of them, to be able to trace their literature. What I'm saying is that the dominant church of Christendom, I'm just challenging where this idea came from, that the Catholic Church presided over...
No one has said the Catholic Church.
Nor do we actually think that the evidence begins and rests with papal statements. I mean, with all respect to the Pope, that is not the be-all and end-all of evidence.
It's a fair bit. If you add to it councils and other teachings of the magisterium of the Catholic Church... All I'm asking for is evidence.
Yes, now, but my reading, evidence my within reading a narrow of, my frame reading of the Catholic of,
my
Church.
Reading, well, it's not narrow. It's the broadest possible tradition. And I'm asking, where is the evidence that there was ever a suggestion that we were to go for broke and do whatever we liked. And I'm suggesting
no one has suggested that about the Catholic Church tonight on the program, John. No one has suggested that.
I'm just hearing but
that. Yes, the church.
I'm using the word church with a small c. That may be... that means all of those denominations, including Baptists, Orthodox, whomever.
Well, can I say this? Having formerly been an Anglican,
yes,
and I was for most of my life, I never heard that coming out of the Anglican Church. I don't recognise this kind of broad brush blame game,
which
I think is irrelevant. I think the real issue is the environment.
Indeed.
Let's, is it our home? Is it our resource? How do we keep the balance right? And what are we going to do?
Let's not get bogged down in definitions. Can I call a call to you? Because I really want to move on. And this is an example, I think, of where playing definitional games of I win, you win, your definitions aren't clear enough, highlights the very dilemma that we're faced with. The planet is at risk within 10 to 15 years, if you take notice of the IPCC and other bodies, of getting into a cataclysmic position. Yet here we are, four people concerned about it, who can't even agree on foundational definitions, let alone environmental definitions.
That's John, that's a parody of that discussion. I was only getting at the blame game. The question of whether or not the environment or the world is at threat in 15 years, I heard all that in the 1970s, I might say, from very similar kinds of people, including the Club of Rome, who warned us gloom and doom, the world was going to be overpopulated, there'd be no food, India would be starved, write them off, said Paul Ehrlich. I've heard it all before, with Cardinal Pell, who's a highly intelligent man, and not to be dismissed in the way that he has been earlier.
I haven't dismissed him. It is reasonable
to have a healthy scepticism about science, which frankly doesn't have all of the answers, let alone all of the solutions.
Eleni.
Yes. Look, John, you might find this unusual for a Protestant, but my point was actually that if we're going to make a difference, we're going to save the planet, we actually have to begin with confession. And the next step in confession is repentance, and we actually have to change the way that we live. And what I've been suggesting tonight is that Christianity has within it some suggestions for ways to live that can help save the planet. One of those metaphors which hasn't been mentioned tonight that I want to put on the table is that the earth is gift. Because there's a big difference between saying the earth is house and the earth is resource to saying the earth is gift. The earth, the planet, is God's gift to us, and we have destroyed it. Almost.
We haven't destroyed it.
Almost.
That's just not true.
Well, that can be argued. Well, the point is, do we work towards, are we capable of sharing enough in common to recognise that whether or not the threat is imminent or a little way off, unless we deal with it, that we're going to be in difficulties, some difficulties, that we do need to take steps towards it. Would you concede that much, John?
What I'd say is this. I don't know about the doom game. What I do know is that insofar as we can restrain the use of carbon in the unrestrained way in which I think we've tended to use it, is going to assist in a much cleaner environment for us all, is going to have better health outcomes for everybody, and is a more responsible way to behave. I say that without at the same time endorsing, because I'm not in a position to do so, the science or particular scientists who claim to know, as they in the past they have claimed to know.
Are you a climate change skeptic? That's how you're sounding.
It's a heretic to you, isn't it?
I mean, no, it's not a heretic. I'm asking a real...
Now, hang on. You're now putting names on people, John.
He's been doing that all night.
Look, I'm saying I don't know. Yes, I am sceptical. But I am saying that if the part that we would agree on is that there are responsible ways of behaving, and if we can have an environment that is more responsible, is cleaner and greener, if you like, in that sense, I'm all for that.
Well, John, then I can tell you who's not sceptical. The people on the islands of Tuvalu, Kiribati, the Marshall Islands, Papua New Guinea, that live in the delta lands of Bangladesh, they are not sceptical.
And nor is the IPCC. And that's probably the broadest coalition of scientists you're going to get in the world.
And have they never been wrong?
Well, the IPCC on this instance have yet to be proved wrong, yes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, we will. But all you can do is rely on the best advice.
What I'm saying is I agree with a lot of what they're saying without necessarily imbibing the whole doomsday scenario.
Then how do we proceed? How do we proceed? Because potentially an alliance between those who care for creation, for whatever reasons they care, is a most powerful alliance, both in the search for truth and in the search for responsible actions. I mean, it's both principle and action that we're looking for here. Lee, leaving aside the issue of whether one's a climate skeptic or not, what are the in principle areas that discomfort you about the way the churches in general behave on environmental issues? What gets your goat?
Well, there's nothing that actually gets my goat when you're talking about the churches. And I think this is what we need to identify here when we're discussing these supposed differences. The Greens have a strong commitment to ecological sustainability, to social equity, to freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of for people of all faiths to be able to work on their own religions. Now, what you see when you start talking about differences is that any the differences that may be there, and John has identified some of them, are with certain leaders within the church. I would argue that when you look at the faith, the values that come from the faiths of different religions, that there is enormous issues in common with eliminating poverty, stopping the arms race. You've given examples about gambling before. So there's many specific examples as well as these wider principles on which we agree. So there's nothing that gets my goat at all. But I do remain concerned when I hear statements from Archbishop Peter Jensen about women, from Cardinal Pell about climate change issues. And it seems that John here tonight is largely just repeating what you so often read from Cardinal Pell in the Telegraph, and I find that quite
unfortunate. So you're annoyed by the scepticism of some elements
in
the church.
Yes, and I don't think that's entering the debate in an honest way.
That's not just about elements in the church. There are a broad number of people who may or may not be related to religious groups who are, for their own reasons, whatever, sceptical about climate change. It's not something that's specifically to do with religion, is it, as such?
Oh, no, not at all.
Whereas, say, I'll give you an example. The Greens would not share many of the broad concerns that the churches do on issues of bioethics.
Well, again, it would depend on who you're talking about within the churches. And I think that is an interesting question that you raise that, because like just recently, Pope Benedict brought forward some new sins, and I was interested to read within those. There's issues about reducing pollution and addressing poverty. And then when you look at the one of the biggest crises in the world at the moment is the issue of poverty, particularly related to there's the subprime crisis. It's just driving so much hardship. And what's that based on? That's based on people being charged interest on loans. Now, usury used to be a sin, and you don't hear that debated within the church these days. You hear so many sexual-based issues to do with homosexuality, abortion, stem cells, marriage, and women as priests and things like that.
So you're saying that the church has narrowed its agenda in many ways.
Yes, and I think that's...
And it's got to recover its broader agenda.
Very much so.
Eleni, your response to that?
The church's agenda is very broad.
But it is true that the church, in some areas, in public statements, perhaps not so much now, but certainly up to over the last 40, 50 years, seem to focus on sexual ethics as...
There's the issue of public statements, and then there's the issue about which public statements are picked up by the media and become entrenched in our society's discourse. I mean, the church broadly has been putting out statements, calling for action on poverty and issues of war and peace and militarism and materialism and greed and individualism for years. It's often much harder for those statements to find space in public discourse than it is for other more sensationalist ones.
Yes, the press wants to focus on the
and women and
on particular issues. John Fleming, let me ask you: the church over the years, particularly the Catholic Church, having had 2,000 years of experience with this, is very good at relating intelligently to those with whom it doesn't share a total agenda, but shares some part of an agenda. The Pope is quite happy, both John Paul II and Benedict, to make overtures in carefully defined ways with other faiths, recognising that there are issues which can be shared, and on those issues which we can unite or share common ground or common cause, we should.
I think that's absolutely right, and it goes back to the Catholic Church's understanding of the natural law, and I agree with Eleni entirely that the Catholic Church, along with other churches, has been speaking out loudly and clearly on poverty and inequitability, for example, of distribution of food resources, for 50 years that nobody's been listening. And if you look, go back to Paul VI and Populorum Progressio and other documents like that, and I'm sure there'd be, Eleni could tell me, equivalent statements within her own tradition. And I look back in the Lambeth conferences. These issues have been on the church's agenda for yonks. To say the church is preoccupied with sexual ethics is a really more, I suppose, a judgment on the media's preoccupation with the sexual revolution. But I think it's right, and I think that the reason is that there are certain, if you like, axioms of moral belief that are held in common by human beings. That's why you can have, for example, a universal declaration of human rights, that people agree that there is the right to life, the right to freedom, the right to be educated, the right to decent standards of housing, accommodation. And if you look at John the 23rd, and now we're going right back into the 40s when he was engaged in assisting the development of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. He was principally on about some of those major issues which direct us towards world conflict. So I think any fair historian of ideas, any fair review of the Christian tradition is to say the Christian church has had the broadest agenda. Where we take issue with the Greens is that they have themselves focused on particular issues which we would regard as horrific, and they are issues connected with abortion, related to issues of overpopulation, connected with that only, of course, contraception, euthanasia, the killing of newborn infants with disabilities, and so on. There's a eugenic impulse to rid the world of unwanted burdens. And so insofar as we would depart from the Greens, we don't depart from them on the questions of equity of distribution of resources, questions of poverty and so on. What we do disagree with them on is certain of the stratagems that they have proposed as reasonable strategies.
Well, let's talk about that, because you were just...
I mean, fundamentally distorted our policies.
I will accept that you have a different view on that. I accept that.
It's actually distorted.
Okay, I'll give you a chance to respond to that in a moment. But this highlights, I think, what the central dilemma that I'm trying to articulate tonight is, that we constantly snipe at each other about the area, the edges of the issue, and allow that to become the centre, rather than say, look, let's accept that we diverge, that we have different interpretations, let's find those things which we can agree upon. Yet here we've spent the bulk of this program sniping at each other on definitional issues.
Not everybody's sniping in this program. But look, I thought it was interesting is that John complains about how the church's teachings and their work has been presented and outlined the breadth of the work that's been undertaken, and then proceeds to again try and pigeonhole the Greens with some outrageous statements about unborn children, about children with disabilities that are just absolutely not true. Now, I'm very proud of the work that my colleagues in the Greens, other Greens MPs, undertake, but some of those issues that he talked about, euthanasia, on abortion issues, which is women's right to choose their reproductive, make decisions on their reproductive rights, that's only one aspect of our work. So often people are trying to pigeonhole us as just working on the environment. We have policies across the board that do address many of the issues that have been taken up, both in the debate tonight and by the wider church community. And try and pigeonhole us in such a way is not any credit to himself or the church that he works in.
Well, I think, Lee, what I began by saying, to be fair to me, is I identified together with Lenny the things that I thought we agreed on. I did say that. I said where I think that the disagreement comes is in some of those really hot-button issues. Now, if you've got
now, the thing is, though, can we not agree that we will disagree on profound on a whole lot of issues, even onto the nature of creation itself? But we do agree that the issue is important enough for us, as the church has done and as other groups have done, intelligent, rational people dealing with the political realities. We can say, let's put those to one side and come together on those things which we can come together on.
Yeah, that's putting it your way, John. I mean, let me say this. The way I would prefer to put it is, I am prepared to work with anybody where there is a common agenda for a common set of goals. That includes Lee, includes Eleni, includes any human being who shares with me a common concern. We've seen it par excellence on the Pokies issue. But that doesn't mean to say I'm going to go quiet on issues that I regard fundamentally inhuman. If Peter Singer was a member of the Greens, he stood for the Greens, and his statements on these issues stand for all to see. Now, I don't think there's any point me trying to say, well, I can just set that to one side. I have to say that as in conscience as a human being. But does that mean I wouldn't work with Lee on questions of carbon emissions? Of course it doesn't. It means I would work with her because we agree.
Let's take a few calls. You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. John Cleary with you. My guests, Lee Rhiannon of the Greens, Father John Fleming, President of Campion College in Sydney, and the Reverend Eleni Poulos, Director of Justice for Uniting Church of Australia. Let's take a few calls. 1-300-800-222. Robert in Canberra. Hello, Robert. Welcome to you. What would you like to say?
Oh, hi. I think it's really important that when we're looking at the barriers that are stopping us from coming to grips with climate change, that we, those of us who come from a Judeo-Christian background, that we acknowledge that a lot of the seminal myths in that background are about man dominating nature. I think what was going on in the ancient world, when we had the shift from polytheistic religions to the monotheism of the Hebrews, what happened was the monotheistic God allowed man to become more removed from nature and much more in control of nature. And we see this in the early chapters of the Bible. In the rebellion against the Egyptians and the Exodus, nature is used as a weapon against the Egyptians. And my belief about monotheism is that God becomes made in the image of man. Whereas in the polytheistic religions of the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, so many of the gods are sort of half man, half nature, or a human representation of nature. And at the same time, we see the role of women downplayed, and women become much less powerful. And I think, you know, this man dominating nature started then, and it's continued with the sort of self-righteous American Protestants. They picked it up with their technophilia in the 19th century. They transformed their continent with fantastic technology, you know, the railroad, the telegraph, and they continued it in the 20th century. And so I think it's a very strong tradition in the Judeo-Christian tradition of man, and I mean particularly man, dominating nature. So it's hard for people like George Bush to become humble about nature. You know, there's always this impulse to dominate it.
Robert, we'll take that as a comment. We've got a number of calls on the board. Must move on. Thanks for your observation. We'll move on to Michael in Canberra. Hello, Michael. Welcome to you.
Good evening, John. Good evening, all. I just wanted to make two very quick points. One is with regards to the church and not being able to present any evidence of church document or teaching that's sort of anti-environment, what have you. I suppose you have to look at what the definition of what church is, and the church is the people. It's not the teachings or the books or the encyclicals and what have you. It's the people are what make up the church, and so as much as any Catholic is doing something that's detrimental to the environment, or any Catholic businessman or businesswoman for that matter, in as much as that's happening, that's the Catholic Church. You know, I'd like to be hearing from the pulpit on Sundays a message about how the environment can be cared for. The other point I just wanted to quickly make was about the sort of denying of some of the horrible possible outcomes that we've had, and I think most responsible people would say that they are projections. You know, if things don't change, this is what could happen. It's a bit like hopping in your car and saying, I can't see any accidents happening, so there's no need to wear a seatbelt. So even if you think, you know, environmental collapse isn't imminent, it would be good to take steps to avoid it happening, even if we can't necessarily see it happening. That's really all I wanted to make. Thanks, John.
Thanks for that. I'll take that as an observation too. We got any questions, folks? We've got lots of speeches, a few questions. Maxine in Burnie in Tasmania. Hello, Maxine. How are you? Maxine's not there anymore. To Julian in Wangaratta. Hello, Julian. Hi. Julian, you there? Julian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm
there. Ah, good on you. What would you like to say? Quickly?
I'll just make a quick statement. I'm all for Father's statements in regards to the Catholic Church. I think we have to realise that we can have all the policies we want, but you can arrange all the deck chairs, but at the same time, the Titanic sink, and I'd be worried about saving myself before I'd worry about saving a sapling.
Ah, John Flynn, you've got to have a response to that.
Look, he's absolutely right. I mean, Julian, I mean, in the end, human beings made in the image and likeness of God have got to attend to their salvation. That would require them behaving in a morally responsible fashion, and therefore the saving of saplings from unnecessary assault would be part of that. I mean, in the same way as avoiding cruelty to animals, but I'm thinking of battery farming of chickens and so on. So I don't think the two are in opposition, Julian. I think that, yes, there is the importance of saving your soul, but saving your soul also goes to the question of your own personal character and the moral decisions that you take in relation to yourself, to others, to God, and, of course, to the wider environment in which you live.
Yes. Eleni. Oh,
I think John said that quite well. It's probably something we agree on tonight.
Yes, we'd all agree on that.
Time for one other call before we wind things up. To Fred on the north coast of New South Wales. Hello, Fred. How are you? No, Fred's gone off too. To Bob in Bulladilla. Hello, Bob.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good. Very briefly.
Yeah, well, I believe there's a lot of duplicity in the climate debate. How can we justify mining iron ore, mining coal, when I'm told that these are the cause of all our problems? I believe in climate change. I don't believe in anthropogenic as being the cause. I can't find the science that says that it is so.
So you believe there are other causes involved?
Yeah, I've spent my life, my working life, in making alternative fuels which do away with 20% and 70% of the particulate matter. I've spent my life in making a full...
Bob, I'm going to have to wind you up, because essentially you're saying, irrespective of whether it's human-caused or not, whether it's anthropogenic or not, we still need to deal with it, and you're one of those who's getting on with dealing with it. And I guess really that's the essence of the issue, Lee, isn't it? That we, you know, irrespective of cause, we have to deal with what's happening.
Well, we have to deal with it, and we do need to work together. And there's obviously been some differences tonight, but I think there is that enormous common ground, which is so important. And one point that Bob made on climate change is the key issue there is dealing with the coal industry. That's where 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from, and we need more combined work on that issue.
15 seconds, John.
Look, essentially I agree with that. I don't agree with the doomsdayites. I don't think there's proof for it. But that doesn't stop me making responsible decisions on a day-to-day basis about the way in which I treat the community in which I live, in the environment, which is my home.
And to work with others.
With others to that end.
Eleni Poulos.
Our planet's in deep trouble. We have to get together to solve it, and we need to start by looking very deeply at our economic systems and seeing what we can do to overcome coal industry.
If you want to have your say, you can join us a little later on in the chat room. You're on Sunday night.